Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll meet the new 34th Red Bull Infantry Division commander, check in with Minnesota's AMVETS, get a legislative update, and learn about a new super clinic at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
April 22nd is Earth Day. One of Minnesota National Guard's continuing priorities is to advance an environmentally sustainable infrastructure, from building standards to protecting and enhancing the land that our soldiers train on. Our Camp Ripley environmental team does a great job on environmental stewardship on Earth Day and every day. It's that constant attention to preserving our natural resources that have made Camp Ripley a training destination for both military and civilian organizations. This state-owned resource is one of the Guard's best resources for training our competent and ready force.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now in studio is Brigadier General John Jensen, who was recently went through a ceremony to change of command ceremony to become the division commander of the legendary 34th Infantry Division Red Bulls. General, welcome to the show and congratulations.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be here with you again, and I appreciate the shout-out there. It's an honor and a privilege to be the division commander.
Well, I've got this little pamphlet from attending that change of command, and there's quite a list of officers that you're following in there, including General Leutholdt, General Elisario, General Nash, of course, was division commander, General Rick Erlinson, Larry Shelito, and then going back, there's some pretty big names from World War II and going back almost 100 years. So to have your name on that list has got to feel pretty good, sir.
Well, you know, Tom, the five that you mentioned, Major Generals Shelito, Erlinson, Nash, Elisario, and Leutholdt, you know, I knew all five of those gentlemen individually, personally, during their time as division commanders. And then General Hanula, who's on that list as well, I got to know him after division command. And then General Miller, I knew him before division command. So seven of those guys I personally know, and I can tell you what makes this special is knowing how deep those seven gentlemen loved the division, how much they honored the opportunity to command the division. So I'm just going to try to keep, you know, building on what those seven gentlemen left there in Rosemont for me.
Well, General, I want to go back a little bit on your career. I understand you graduated from high school in Council Bluffs, Iowa. And then you went to Northwest Missouri State University, and you signed up for military service in 1982 as a combat medic.
It's a combat medic. I tried to be an infantryman, but the recruiter told me that all those positions were filled. I think he might not have been telling me the truth. I think they just needed some medics, and so, yeah, I became a medic and went down to Fort Sam Houston.
Well, the infantrymen always like to have a medic, somebody there to patch them up just in case, sir.
Absolutely.
And then I understand you received your commission a few years later in 1989.
Yeah, in 1989, I agreed to go down to Fort Benning to the Officer Candidate School. Went down there, spent summer there. At the time, we called it Benning School for Boys, although it was, you know, female and male. It was still called Benning School for Boys. And so I went down there, got my commission as an infantry officer. And I guess the rest is history. I don't know.
Sir, when I look at all the positions you've held, you've really worked your way up through a lot of them, and most recently you're Deputy Commander and Army Reserve Component Integration Advisor, United States Army Africa and Southern Europe, and I know that you're also Director of the Joint Staff at Minnesota National Guard, and now, of course, you're Division Commander, so you're no longer two-hatted. I guess you're three-hatted position, sir.
Three-hatted just temporarily, though. You know, one of the things I'll have to give up on that list, Tom, is the U.S. Army Africa position as I move into the division command position. And I am a little sad about that. I've really enjoyed my time with the U.S. Army team over there in Vicenza, Italy, and having the opportunity to travel to Africa, spend time in Africa, and get to know some of the people on that continent, some of the countries on that continent. It's been professionally one of the most rewarding things I've ever done.
That'd be a great experience, sir. And as we say so often on this show, if for some reason the division has to go to Africa, you've got a little bit of background there, don't you?
I might have a friend or two over there, but, you know, it's kind of interesting. It really is, you know, obviously it's a continent, so it's a complex place, but, you know, 54 countries, 1.2 billion people, over 2,000 languages spoken on that continent, so it's incredibly complex, you know, incredibly diverse, and it just really taught me a lot about the world in my year and a half over there.
Well, General, you've had a lot of positions, and you've learned a lot over all those years. Started out as a combat medic, and I'm sure that experience as an enlisted man gives you a little different view from now that you're a brigadier general.
Yeah, it has. I was lucky enough, you know, first to serve as an enlisted soldier and then later as an NCO before I got commissioned. So I've had the opportunity to see the Army really at every level we have, all the way from E1 to now 07. And I say this, you know, kind of a joke, but it's the truth. The only two ranks, Tom, that I held that I did not have to clean the latrine was when I was an E6 staff sergeant and when I was a 06 colonel. So, so far, 07, I'm almost, you know, maybe I might be able to put 07 in that same bin as well. So I think I've had a great opportunity to do just about everything the Army has to offer.
General, if they call you back for that duty, give me a holler. I'll come over and help you with it.
Thanks, Tom.
Sir, as we said at the opening, you've just taken over command of the legendary 34th Infantry Division, Red Bulls, and that must be just an honor and a privilege, but what type of things do you expect over the next few years when you hold that position?
Yeah, well, I expect us to keep up the op-tempo that the division headquarters has had over the last couple of years. There's a saying down in Rosemont, that saying is there's no such thing as an off-season for the Red Bulls, and that's what I expect. I mean, we're pretty busy this year with the training plan that General Lloyd laid out for the division. You know, we started out in December by supporting First Corps in an exercise called Yamasakura. You know, that's been a long-time exercise that division has supported. In February, we'll go to Germany and support an exercise called Austere Challenge for U.S. Army Europe. And then later in the summer, in July, we'll go back and support the Pacific Command again with an exercise called Talisman Saber. So the division headquarters is effectively spread, you know, on three different continents. You know, we're in Europe, we're in North America, and we're out on the Pacific. So we're busy, and that's good because I still believe this, that, you know, soldiers and leaders come to the military, come to the National Guard to go do things, go do interesting things, go do hard things. And one of the ways that we retain our soldiers and our leaders is by putting them in these scenarios, these exercises, where they get to go to different places and do hard things.
General, as you know, you've been on the radio with us, and we've had a lot of your officers on the radio. The last few years, you had a warfighter, and you had the training at the National Training Center, and the reports we've gotten is that the division has performed wonderfully and that your readiness status is at the top or near the top. How does that impact the division, and how does that impact what the National Guard Bureau decides who's going to go where?
Well, thanks for putting all that pressure right on me, Tom, you know, laying that out. No, I think it's a great reflection of the seven gentlemen I mentioned before, as well as the great NCO Corps that we have, as well as just the soldiers that we have in the division. And so we don't feel any pressure. I mean, we come to work every day to be the best we can. You know, this is what I say. We're a professional organization. We're a learning organization. We're going to go every single day and give it our best effort. And if at the end of the day we're at the top of the heap, well, good for us. But that's not what motivates us. What motivates us is just going out there and giving our best effort and living up to the incredible reputation our division has nationally and globally. The reason why the division's in Europe and in the Pacific is because we're desired by other organizations to come work for them, come work with them. And so we're gonna honor that, and we're going to continue doing that.
So, General, the lesson to be learned there is when you perform well and your readiness status is at the top, you're going to be asked to perform again.
Yeah, you know, there's this term that's used at National Guard Bureau. We take great honor in it, but it's called the Minnesota way. And so when there are national issues in our National Guard, They look and see what Minnesota's doing and how we're attacking it, and then if they can apply it elsewhere, they'll try. Our Yellow Ribbon Network is the classic example. I mean, we lead the nation in that program. We developed that program here in Minnesota, and as much as they've tried to replicate that, they just can't, because there is something special about Minnesota, just not the soldiers in our formation, but the entire state and the people that support our military here.
General, thanks for joining us on today's show, Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom.
Coming up next, we'll speak to Minnesota's AMVETS. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In this segment, we're going to visit with John Flores, who is the first vice commander for AMVETS here in Minnesota. John, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, thank you.
John, for our listeners, I understand you were active duty Army, you were Minnesota Army National Guard, you were in, you were out, but you served for a lot of years.
Yes, 24 years all told.
So you stayed in long enough so you're eligible for some retirement.
And got my retirement.
Get that before you get out, right?
Oh, yes. That's the rule.
Congratulations. Now, tell me about when did you join AMVETS?
I totally joined AMVETS about 12 years ago. Joined in my post in St. Paul, post number 5, and worked my way up the ranks, and I'm the current commander of AMVETS post 5 in St. Paul.
Okay, now, John, most of our listeners are familiar with the American Legion, the VFW, the disabled veterans. AMVETS, what's different about you and what's your mission?
Well, our mission is that, we, like the other veteran service organizations, VSOs, our mission is veterans, taking care of veterans in some fashion, in some way, on the main issues. We've been addressing homelessness, and that's getting some good attention. We're talking a lot about the suicide rate amongst our veterans. There's a card on my desk. I also serve as the staff person right now, currently with State AMVETS. And there's a card on my desk that said 22 soldiers committed suicide yesterday. So that's one of our main focuses as well, getting outreach, passing out crisis cards, talking to families. During the State Fair last year, we had a booth along with the others, VSOs, and we passed out quite a bit of literature. And I got a chance to talk to two families that were suffering from that type of crisis and gave them a lot of information, hooked them up with people, and hopefully they'll reach out to that son or that daughter that's in crisis right now. We're also passionately concerned about veterans' homes, and our brothers and sister veterans at the Minneapolis home that need a bridge.
And we'll get to those two items a little bit, John. How many members do you have, and who's eligible?
We have right now, depending on whether they renew and what they're up to, between 1,200 and 1,400 veterans.
And how many groups around the state? How many? What do you call them?
We have posts.
Posts?
Posts. And right now we currently have 18 posts all across the state.
Okay, and who's eligible to join?
If you have an honorable discharge and you served in our military, you're eligible to join.
So don't have to have served in a war zone,
no,
none of that stuff.
No,
just
you don't.
In the service, you're eligible.
Have to have an honorable discharge, and some services don't get a DD-214. They get discharge papers. So we review that and verify it, and they can join, and we hook them up to a post in their area. If not, we create one.
We're speaking with John Flores, the first vice commander of AMVETS here in Minnesota on Minnesota Military Radio. John, I understand that AMVETS has some scholarships.
We just awarded a scholarship to a young junior ROTC young lady last year, and we had a surprise at the moment I presented the award, the scholarship award. She left the next day for basic training, so she's not only a student going to college, but she's also a veteran. So she went to basic training and advanced training, and now we have a veteran scholarship as well.
She'll use that when she gets home.
Oh, yes.
So, John, we started talking earlier. You mentioned a bridge and veterans' home, and, of course, this time of year the state legislature is in session, and that means none of us are safe, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's get to the good stuff. there's a little problem out at the Veterans Home out by Fort Snelling because there's only one entrance to get in and off of that essentially that island out there.
Yeah, it is kind of an island, and the access that we have currently is through the park. We go in through the back door. The bridge has been out for many years, and every year we go to the legislature and pray and hope that they'll fund a new bridge so that we can get to the Vets Home out there and they can access and egress themselves and all the other providers. So it's really important that we get that funded soon.
And that request is in front of the legislature again this year?
The request is in front of the legislature currently.
Okay, and then where do we stand on the veterans' homes? We've got a lot more people that need a bed than we have beds.
We have over 1,500 people that are on a waiting list to get into a vet's home. Currently, I think there's about 140 to 150 that are newly authorized beds. So we have a tremendous need. Part of that need is just creating a little homelessness, which we really abhor, and we're trying to fight that, that one too. But we need beds, and we need those homes built. And so, again, we're at the legislature with hat in hand. If there's any good time to fund things like that is when we have a surplus. So we have a surplus, and in our view, it's time to build several of those homes for the need.
Now, John, let me see if I understand this. I know that the beds, that part of the program is managed by the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs.
It is.
And we've got the homes around the state, but the feds have authorized another 144 beds. And it's my understanding that the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is looking for direction from the state legislature on which communities to build these homes in.
That's part of the story. It also requires funding. And so that's why we're hat in hand at the legislature to get those things funded and get those beds as well.
So that'll help keep some of those veterans from becoming homeless?
It'll take out about 10%. But, as you know, people are passing away every year, and other people are coming into the need every year. The number doesn't change very much.
And, John, the last item I want to talk about, AMVETS is part of what's called the Commander's Task Force, which is where the 9 federally chartered veteran service organizations get together once a month, and they work on a lot of legislative ideas. And they came together this year, and they brought some things up to the Capitol, and we had a pretty successful day when it was Veterans Day on the Hill.
Yes, it was a good day. It's hard to talk about the legislature when you have veterans there. Some of them are angry that things aren't done, and others are happy that something's done.
But we had a good turnout.
We had a wonderful turnout. It really was great this year.
Yeah, how important is it for our veterans to call their state legislature?
Oh, boy.
And we
have to call. We have to get our veterans out there to call our legislature and demand that they, follow through on and helping the veterans' issues with the bills that are before them.
John, we've only got about 30 seconds left. What would you have to say to our listeners all over the state of Minnesota about the state legislature and all of the issues that are there?
Well, I can't say anything bad about those folks, but I might want to. But please call your legislator and ask them to support the veterans' issues, the veterans' bills, veterans' homes. Our MDVA, outstanding organization. They're great people. They need this support as well. So please call. Call your senators. Call your reps. And ask them where they are. As one good Marine said, if you don't stand with us, don't stand in front of us.
All right, John. Appreciate your coming in quick and sitting in for Commander Russ Kunkel, who couldn't make it today due to the weather.
Yeah.
And I hope you have some good experiences talking to your state legislator.
Oh, we do talk to him.
Yes, sir, I believe it. Thanks for joining us today.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
That was John Flores, the first vice commander of AMVETS on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll continue our legislative update in just a moment. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to continue a legislative update to see where veterans legislation is heading at the state capitol. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly message from the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shalito.
I am pleased to share with you that the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs Fiscal Year 2016 Annual Report is complete and available to view at minnesotaveteran.org. As you look through this report, you will see examples of our progress. In state government, the annual report is an important tool to tell an agency's story and generate support. I am very proud of the work our agency has done and continues to do. Our annual report gives us the opportunity to highlight our work, reassure our stakeholders, shares a year's worth of success, and look to the future. Check it out today at minnesotaveterans.org.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelledo. For more information, please go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com. Joining us now is Ben Johnson, who's the Legislative Director from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and Peggy Moon, who's the Legislative Liaison for the American Legion Department of Minnesota. Peggy, Ben, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
Good to have you back in the studio, Peggy.
It's always good to be here.
Ben, I want to start with you. I think the legislature is off on a short Easter break.
That's correct. They are back home in their districts this week for the Easter Passover break. They'll resume their work next Tuesday.
Now, I hear, following some of this, that they're a little bit ahead of schedule this year, but they're packaging things up in omnibus bills, and the politics is starting to play havoc. And from here to the end of the session, we're going to figure out what they're going to pass and what they're not.
That is correct. The House and Senate worked really hard to get all the omnibus budget bills passed before the break so that parties would know where they stand about 5 weeks between when they resume and the end of the session. So that is when, as you put it, the politicking will happen and negotiations between the House, Senate, and the governor's office will be taking place.
For someone like me who doesn't have a political bone in my body, it's hard to watch, but this is the process we have, and democracy isn't clean and tidy, is it?
It can be a challenge. We know that they're operating in good faith, and they really do have the best interests of Minnesotans and Minnesota veterans in mind. The challenge is, of course, that there's some different perspectives in play, and so the governor has his proposed budget. The House and Senate have their own budgets, both passed theirs for the state government finance, which is where MDVA is located. Those were passed off of their floors, and the next step will be the conference committee where senators and representatives will come together and negotiate, talk about the differences between the two bills and see if they can get something passed to the governor.
You know, in defense of our elected officials, they do put in a lot of hours in those committee meetings, and they work on a lot of stuff, and we should be pleased that we do have this process. Ben, can you tell me, where's the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs on their request from the governor's office for funding?
Well, MDVA is really appreciative of, I'll echo what you said, we understand that the work that they do is really important, and we appreciate the effort that the legislators put in. In this case, they funded the MDVA at base budget levels, which means we were basically held harmless in the process of funding our operations at the veterans' homes, cemeteries, and our programs and services. The challenge is that they did not fund the governor's recommendations for the agency in some of the areas that we were looking for increased funding, some of these areas that we know there are going to be costs associated with the work that we do that they decided not to fund and did not include in the budgets that they've passed.
Peggy, I understand that the state legislators is looking at funding the MDVA at about $4.5 million less than the governor's request.
I know.
How does that work?
Isn't that astounding? This isn't. I can't believe that predicament we're in this year. But we do need to fully fund the Department of Veterans Affairs, and we need to make sure they have that extra money that they need to be able to live up to the contracts that we've signed with the unions. Our people, if you've ever visited a veteran's home, work very, very hard, and their jobs are not easy. And we have to show them that we will honor all of the agreements that we've made with them. So that 1.5% that we're talking about to help the bottom line is crucial. It's crucial.
Ben, one of the issues I know that we're talking about is the state veterans cemetery up in Duluth. We have two state cemeteries now, one in Little Falls and one down in Preston. And we've had federal funding for $8.34 million to build the state cemetery in Duluth. But it looks like the legislature is not providing the operating funds.
Well,
Yes, that's partially true. The Senate recognized the need to fund the ongoing operations. The new cemetery is scheduled to open summer, July of 2018, and it'll require full-time employees to operate and maintain it. And we requested $500,000 per year, which is the cost associated with that, for the ongoing operations of this new cemetery. As you mentioned, we did get federal funding to construct it. The grant process included an acknowledgement by the state of Minnesota that we would fund the operating and associated costs of the cemetery. We requested the funding. The Senate recognized the value and the need to meet that obligation. The House had a different idea, there is a shortfall and a difference between the House and Senate versions.
Peggy, one of the reasons we're building these state cemeteries is so veterans can be buried closer to home so their families can come visit.
Exactly, and that's what's important to all of our veterans, obviously. They want to be close to home, and they want to be near their family so that their families can come and pay respect to them after they pass on to the big post in the sky. So this is important, and if we've signed agreement saying that we will be fiscally responsible and support these cemeteries, I think we need to hold up our bargain.
So that $500,000 to pay the operating expenses annually for the new state veteran cemetery in Duluth is pretty important.
It's crucial.
Ben, what kind of shape are we in with maintaining all the veterans' homes that we have now? Are they in good shape, or are there some deferred maintenance?
There is some deferred maintenance. We do the best we can with the resources that we have, and we take it seriously. The health and safety of our veteran residents and the spouses who live in these homes is paramount. And the goal is to make sure that we're taking care of the buildings as well. Haven't been very successful in past years at getting bonding money for these sort of capital investment and improvements. So this year the agency requested $2 million of repair and betterment funding from the general fund as part of our agency's budget ask. Governor recommended and supported that. The legislature has indicated to us that there will be a bonding bill, potentially a bonding bill this year, and they think that that's a better route to fund. However, they haven't passed one in a number of years, and so we think that going through the agency budget process is a better method.
Peggy, we've got some homes out there in the state, and we've got some extra beds authorized, but we've got to keep them up to date, don't we?
Well, exactly. Just like you have to take care of your home. I know Carl and I have lived in our place for 17 years. I just this week had to replace the water heater for the second time, and they said that's pretty normal. Well, how do you do that in all of these homes when repairs need to be done if you can't get the money to fix them? We have many homes that are very old, and obviously they're going to need repair. We try not to do this in a rash movement, but it does need to be taken care of eventually. And now, because it's been a number of years, it's getting to an urgent situation.
Now's the time.
Exactly.
Peggy, last time you were on the show was just before the Veterans Day on the Hill. I understand a lot of veterans showed up.
We had a wonderful turnout this year, and thank you to all the veterans who made that trip up to our state's capital. Senator Gazelka did mention that hearing the veterans recite the Pledge of Allegiance in that rotunda, in the echo, having it said by people who served under that flag, was inspirational, and it really meant something to them. And I thank everybody.
I understand you filled up the first floor and they're up on the second and up on the third floor.
Exactly. It was beautiful.
They were wearing their veterans caps and then they went to visit with their local representative.
Exactly.
So you had a great day, Veterans Day on the Hill. Peggy, how important is it for people to communicate with their elected officials up in the state capitol?
You know, it's crucial because, you know, I can talk to the people from my area, but they're just from my area. We need all of our people, our representatives, to know where we stand. And if we go and talk to them and they say, well, Peggy, I haven't heard from anybody in my area, so it must not be as important to the veteran community as you say it is, then my word means nothing.
So every time a veteran calls.
It's crucial that you all make a phone call so that when we say, hey, the Veterans Administration needs this money, we need this money to take care of our veterans, you got to let them know, and I need each and every one of you to make that point known.
Peggy, Ben, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we'll have a legislative wrap-up. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking in the last segment and now with Ben Johnson, Legislative Director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and Peggy Moon, who's the Legislative Liaison for the American Legion here in Minnesota. And we've been talking about the state legislature, which is out on the Easter break, but they'll be back, and they've got a lot of work to do between now and the end of the session. Ben, speaking of that, last year, after many years of trying, the state legislature passed a law affecting military retirement pay.
They did. This is a really timely opportunity to remind folks about the work that was done. It was many years of effort to get the military pension tax exemption passed in the state of Minnesota. Bipartisan support came out of the House and Senate, got in front of the governor, and he signed it. So now there's about 19,000 veterans in the state of Minnesota who are retirees who have the ability to exempt their pension pay from their state income taxes.
So while you're doing your last-minute taxes this weekend, take a look at that and the fact that you don't have to claim that pay. Ben, we've talked on and off over the last couple of years about the bridge out at the Veterans Home out at Fort Snelling and the fact that it's been closed down for a number of years, needs to be replaced. We can only get in and out of there through the back door. If the legislature chooses to provide funding, how and where do they do that?
Well, this year is technically a budget year. The bonding bill that came through the process last year failed in the last minutes of the last session. So this year the legislature's talking about bringing it back, a bonding bill that would be investing in projects throughout the state of Minnesota, and one that is of key importance to Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and the Minneapolis Veterans Home is the bridge access across Minnehaha Creek. As you mentioned, there's only one way in or out of the campus at this point. The legislature allocated money a few years ago to do all the pre-design and design work. That's done. We're at 99% complete. What we need now is the legislature to pass a bonding bill that includes the funding necessary to repair that bridge. It's a historic truss bridge, but more importantly, it is the only other point of ingress or egress to the veterans' home for employees, for families visiting, for the contractors who are there that are updating some of the buildings. It is key.
And it's an unsafe situation right now. And Peggy, the home out at Fort Snelling is open to veterans from all over the state, as are the other homes.
Exactly. We don't have homes in every little region across Minnesota. We only have 5 homes. And when you're on a list, you go to wherever they happen to have an opening when that opening comes up. So we have people from all over this great state that live at the veterans home in Minneapolis. And this, to me, I can't say it stronger. I think it's a matter of life or death. In the summer, when they've got lots of people in the park, and you take that little road that winds around, it can take you 45 minutes to traverse that and get out of the park, out to the main road. Now, can you imagine if they would have a fire or they would have an explosion? How do we get emergency vehicles in there and get people out fast? We need that road. And the more we put it off, the more it's going to cost. So it needs to be taken care of.
So we need that bridge.
Exactly.
And we've got about 1,500 veterans that can't get into the homes. So for the other 144 beds that are authorized, we need the legislature to decide on the communities, and let's get started building those.
Yes.
Now, Peggy, we've just got a couple minutes left. Once again, the Veterans Day on the Hill was a great day, and we influenced some of the legislators, our listeners out there.
Yes. You've heard some of the needs. Please, you need to make your call to your representative, your senator. You're the only one that can speak from us in your area. Let them know that you care about the veterans and about our troops here in Minnesota.
Peggy and Ben, thanks for the update. And for our listeners, speaking as the host of Minnesota Military Radio, a veteran myself, but most importantly a civilian, it's critically important for you to get on the horn, call your state elected officials, and urge them to support all the veterans' issues, to support the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs, to support the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. They'll know what you're talking about, and they'll listen. If you don't know who your elected state officials are, go to leg.state.mn.us. Make a call today. Have your relatives make a call tomorrow. Between now and the end of the session, your state elected officials need to hear your voice and your urging to support veterans' issues here in Minnesota. Ben, Peggy, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
I appreciate it.
It was Ben Johnson and Peggy Moon joining us for a legislative update on Minnesota Military Radio. Joining me now is Ralph Huesner, who is the Public Affairs Officer for at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. Ralph, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. I'm always pleased to be with you.
Ralph, I was out there a couple of weeks ago because I had a visit with my pharmacist, and I went up to, I think, 4D and discovered a brand new clinic of some kind, and it was monstrous.
You are accurate. We are calling it a super clinic. Let me give you a little bit of background. Minneapolis Bay Medical Center opened in 1988 with 800 inpatient beds. Maximum usage was around 760 inpatient beds. In the last 30 years, medicine has changed drastically. Less of an emphasis on inpatient care and more of an emphasis on outpatient care. For example, today we have maybe 250 inpatients, but we will see 1,000 outpatients. So we began a few years ago a process to retrofit the hospital to focus on outpatient care. We have primary care clinics, and that's where the majority of our veterans go, primary care. They're scattered throughout the hospital, first floor, second floor, third floor, and now the fourth floor. So what we're doing, we're consolidating primary care clinics onto 4Delta. The 4D is the first of three clinics that are going to open. The others are 4E, 4Echo, and 4Foxtrot, 4F. Those clinics will open at the end of the year. So what is a super clinic? In the one space, we have 33 exam rooms, 15 doctors, many nurses, as well as nutritionists, pharmacists. So a veteran can spend more time in a super clinic getting his primary care needs. If he needs to have a mental health counselor, they're on site. If he wants to talk to a dietitian on his diet, dieticians are on site. If he or she needs help with medication counseling, we have a pharmacist there. If he wants to talk to someone about a physical exercise regimen, we have a physical therapist who can come up there. So the super clinic, they're large. As I said, 33 rooms. We have 15 doctors and an assortment of professionals. So we think it's going to make it more convenient for the patient, the outpatient, go to one place, get many of the needs met in one location.
Ralph, I also noticed when I came into the hospital the other day that there's still some construction going on out front. You've been wearing your construction hard hat for years out there.
I know. The long-awaited canopy connector between the new parking ramp, new 3 years ago, and the hospital. Why didn't we build the canopy connector in the first place? It has to do with the cost of building projects. The parking ramp cost $10 million. We had to stay under the $10 million limit because projects costing more than $10 million need to go to the full Congress. So we were able to stay under $10 million for the ramp, but we didn't have enough money to build the canopy connector, which is costing about $800,000. That will be open late June. It'll make life a lot easier for patients parking in the ramp, a direct access into the hospital.
Another great addition, Ralph. We've only got about a minute and a half left, but I understand you've got a new website, something called Access to Care.
It was announced this week, central office, easy to remember, www.accesstocare.va.gov, or just search Access to Care VA. Veterans can go onto this website and search by their location and a number of care coordinates. For example, you can look and see how long is the wait time for primary care at the medical center or a CBOC. How long is the average wait time for mental health, as well as cardiology, urology, audiology, ophthalmology. Simple to use, easy to navigate. It shows the veteran how long the average wait time is. The data is about a month old, so, you know, there are continuing efforts to reduce wait times, but to be candid, there are some long wait times in primary care in few of the specialties.
Now, is that specific to the Minneapolis VA Medical Center and the outpatients?
No, this is a national website. Veterans can see data from all 150 medical centers and the 1,000 community clinics around the country.
And they'll be able to see that you rank high.
It doesn't rank them as far as ranking, but you can, if you have the time and the patience, you can navigate the whole system and identify how much, how long the wait time is. A veteran can look at a particular clinic and say, hey, the wait time is too long there. I'm going to go somewhere else. The veteran gets to decide where he wants to go.
All right. Thank you, Ralph. That's accesstocare.va.gov. Ralph, please greet the director when he comes back, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom. Have a good day.
That was Ralph Huesner, the public affairs officer from the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. We have one mention today. I want to send out a special thank you to Chuck Haas and the Hugo Yellow Ribbon Network. They're just having their annual Girl Scout Cookie Care Package event. This year's cookies go to the Minnesota National Guard's 257th Military Police Company deployed to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. And thanks to the Girl Scouts from the Wyoming Elementary, White Bear North Troop, Central Middle School for their donation of 426 boxes of cookies. And we'd like to thank the Hugo Lions who donated $250 towards buying those cookies. Also in this shipment, they'll be sending several boxes of special wish lift items for the 25 female soldiers and a $25 post-exchange gift card being sent to each of the 150 soldiers in the unit to buy whatever they need at the base PX. This is just one of many care package events completed by Chuck Haas and the Hugo Yellow Ribbon Network. Keep up the great work. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Brigadier General John Jensen, John Flores, Peggy Moon, Ben Johnson, Ralph Huesner, Commissioner Larry Shelleto of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we tee it up for the troops and meet the man behind our Twin Cities honor flights. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.